You're listening to the OCD Stories podcast, hosted by me, Stuart Ralph. The OCD Stories is a podcast dedicated to raising awareness and understanding around obsessive compulsive symptoms. I do this through interviewing inspired therapists, psychologists, and people who have experienced OCD. Welcome to the OCD Stories. And welcome to episode 357, and in this one I chat with Brooke Miller, who has kindly agreed to share her story with us. So in particular, we talk about her journey through therapy, medication, exposure and response prevention therapy, panic, control and OCD, relationship OCD, over-exercising as a punishment, developing intrusive thoughts around her therapist, having a psychotic episode, self-harming, getting a bipolar diagnosis, her experience of having her son get an OCD diagnosis, and much, much more. And thank you to NoCD for supporting the podcast. NoCD offers effective and convenient therapy available in the US and outside the US. To find out more about NoCD, their therapy plans, if they currently take your insurance, or to download their free app, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theOCDstories, or the link will be in the episode description. So thank you as always to you guys for listening. I deeply appreciate it. And without further ado, here is Brooke. Welcome to the show, Brooke.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. And, you know, it'd be great to hear your OCD story. So in as little or as much detail, it'd be good to hear that now.
Sure. So my OCD story began when I was about 8 years old. Hindsight is 20/20 with that. At that time, nobody knew that that's what it was. But it displayed itself in a couple ways. One was I would fold all of my dirty laundry before putting it in my hamper. And the reason for that was it was connected to these thoughts that if I didn't do that, then something bad would happen to a family member. So my mom or dad or sister would die, something tragic. Another thing I did at that time was I was, you know, in my preteens, teenage years. So I had tons of decorative pillows on my bed. I want to say like 13 to 15 of them. And every night, instead of just kind of brushing them off, you know, onto the floor, I would have to take each individual pillow off and set it in a very specific pattern on the floor. And same thing, it was attached to those thoughts of if I did this, then nothing bad would happen to my family. So that's when it started. Like I said, though, you know, that was back, that would have been in the mid 90s. So as you can imagine, OCD was not, there wasn't as much awareness as there is now. So at that time, I was just looked at as a perfectionist, a kid who liked things my way, did a couple kind of, you know, nuancey things, but no big deal, did really well in school. So unfortunately, my OCD was progressing, specifically the perfectionism component was progressing significantly. And it was praised by all the people around me. It was praised by my parents. It was praised by my teachers. And that was something that I would always strive for is, you know, positive recognition. So it just kept feeding the beast. And little did anybody know that that's what it was at the time. So then I progressed into my teenage years, similar, the, compulsions just started, to get worse. However, I was very, very good at hiding them and covering them up, went into college, and that was the first time where I kind of recognized that something wasn't right. I had a lot of just generalized anxiety, and I started having these, like angry outbursts, which were not really, didn't match my personality at all. And I think it was just because I had so much stress and anxiety from the obsessive compulsive disorder that that's just how it kind of all that energy came out.
Yeah.
And so I called my campus health center, and they did have a mental health component. However, I had a very, very poor experience the first time, which is really unfortunate. The therapist, I went into the room. It was the first time I sat down, and the therapist looked at me and started telling me the story of another client. And it was all sexually related content. So it made me really uncomfortable because it didn't apply at all to me. And so that was my first experience. So it was not ideal. I did not go back and I had no interest in going back. So I dealt with it for like another, I don't know, 6 months, 6 to 12 months. And it got really bad. And so I said, it's time to find another therapist. And so I did. Unfortunately, I didn't know any better at that point in time, but it was primarily just talk therapy, which in the moment felt great. I'd be able to talk about, you know, just daily conflicts or things I was struggling with, and we would talk them out and I'd feel better, but there was no sort of exposure response prevention therapy, nothing like that. So we weren't really getting to the core or the root of what I was dealing with. I did end up seeing a psychiatrist around that same time, started on a very low dose of, I think Prozac was the first medication that I tried. And then my husband and I decided that we were going to move to California. So we sold a bunch of our stuff, packed up our bags and moved to California. And I did some travel nursing out there. And surprisingly, I had somewhat of a reprieve from my symptoms. I still had them, but they were not as intense or frequent. And I think a lot of that had to do with just the constant chaos and commotion going on around me. It was very much, my life was very much a distraction and avoidance for me. You know, I was travel nursing, so high expectations, very short time frame to learn. And then I would come home every night and we would explore. You know, we would go to restaurants, we would take mini vacations, et cetera. It was fantastic. We very much enjoyed our time. And then when we were there, we got pregnant with our first child. So we quick hit Europe for a month and then, settled back in Wisconsin, which is where I'm from, because this is where our family is. So one thing I experienced during that time, which was really interesting and I've come to learn more about, is I had minimal, if any, symptoms when I was pregnant. And I've heard that that can be very common in women, just because your hormones are, you know, fluctuating. They're very different than what they usually are. And sometimes that can counterbalance, that serotonin in your body and create a situation where you have less symptoms. So that was really, took me by surprise, but was really nice and appreciated. So then I had my son and, I nursed him for about 12 months. So similar in the sense that my hormones were kind of covering up for it. And then I want to say when he was about 9 months old, it came back with a vengeance. So it was almost like you had this reprieve of about a year and a half. Now I'm going to take everything that you missed during that year and a half, and I'm going to pile it all on you at once. There was obviously this new component of having my son now. So it attacked that aspect very much, which was new. I would spend hours on the internet, searching every answer to everything in regards to him, seeking just constant reassurance, checking. And it was things as simple as like, you know, am I a bad mom? Imagine what would happen if you Google, am I a bad mom? Yeah. It would be, why is my baby crying? Why can't I get him to stop crying? It would be things like, you know, if I had to pick out a new outfit for him because he needed clothing, I would spend 45 minutes to an hour trying to find the perfect, best option for a piece of clothing. This created a lot of stress for me. And then it started to show in a lot of different areas of my life. I started to very much fall back into the, I had to organize certain things, certain ways so that something bad didn't happen to my family, now myself or my son or my husband. The list got longer and longer. I started ritual praying. So I had a prayer that lasts probably about 20 minutes, that I would do every night. And pretty much what it was doing was I would just sit there and rattle off asking for protection from everything that could possibly be wrong. And the list got very lengthy. I'm a nurse by trade. I've been a nurse for about, I don't know, 14, 15, maybe more years. So, you know, it would be everything. It would be from cancer. It'd be from spider bites. It'd be from tornadoes. It would be from hurricanes, even though I live in the Midwest. Things that just were not logical.
Yeah.
And my husband started to notice it because I'd be, you know, something as simple as like loading the dishwasher, and I had to load it in a very specific way. And if I didn't have enough time to do it, or if I felt I was being rushed, I would get very stressed. Sometimes I would cry because of the stress. So we knew that I really needed help. So I found another therapist. So this would be the third therapist, and, walked into her office for the first time, kind of stated at that point in time that I think I might have obsessive compulsive disorder based off what I had read on the internet. And she said, okay, we did kind of, you know, history of what I'd experienced up to that point. And then we made a follow-up appointment. I came in for my follow-up appointment and sat down, and she looked right at me and said, I can't help you. And so I was caught off guard, cause I was like, okay, like, isn't, you know, I come here cause I'm hoping you can help me, and you're straight up telling me I can't, you can't help me. So then I started questioning, you know, can I be helped? So that didn't go well. So I left, and unfortunately the symptoms just, continued to get worse and affect more corners of my life. So I ended up calling our, we have a very well-known behavioral health center, in the area, Rogers Behavioral Health. And I called them, and they had an outreach program at that point in time. And I spoke to somebody from the outreach program, and he was amazing. He made a huge difference in my life. He explained to me how, you know, your insurance company may give recommendations for therapists that can quote unquote treat OCD. But the reality of the situation is that not all of those therapists are appropriately trained to be able to treat OCD. And that's frequently why people end up getting matched with somebody that can't help them progress and get better. So he gave me three recommendations. He said, I have three recommendations for therapists in the area that I know, you know, trained here under very well-known people, are trained in exposure response prevention. They know how to treat people with obsessive compulsive disorder. So I was like, okay, this is great. So I called all three. I made appointments with two of them, was waiting on the third. And then the third called back, and he had availability a little bit sooner. His name is Damon. He has been my therapist now ever since 2013. He has made a huge difference in my life. He is very well versed in obsessive compulsive disorder and exposure response prevention. So I started my journey with him, back in 2013. We tackled a lot of, in the beginning, he explained ERP, to me, and we tackled a lot of the kind of physical compulsions. So some of the, exposures we did were things like looking at a lampshade and looking at a crooked lampshade and not fixing it. We worked on things. I was, at the time I struggled with contamination in the sense I thought there were a lot of things in my environment that were toxic and would give cancer to myself or my son. A couple of those items were receipts, because I thought receipts had BPA in them. I was afraid of plastic bags. Wouldn't touch them, and I wouldn't allow my kid to touch them. I wasn't able to do the laundry because I wasn't able to touch lint. So all of these things we worked on, you know, and it started as little things such as like just poking the plastic bag, and then it would be holding the plastic bag. And then eventually we worked all the way up to having my son run around with a plastic bag while under adult supervision, of course. but so we worked on a lot of those things. So I made significant notable progress. And then after about, I don't know, I want to say like maybe 6 to 9 months, I kind of was like, I got this. I was very confident. I was like, yep, I got this. So I was like, I'm ready to be discharged. And he still to this day, you know, teases me and is like, you were so confident walking out the door. And he's like, I had a feeling you'd be back. So I left, and I was out of treatment for like about a year or two. And then I had my first panic attack. I work in a hospital, so it ended up being a scenario where I had a code called. So a team arrived to help me because I was having heart palpitations. And at the time I thought I was having a cardiac event. And then we realized that it was panic attack. So I called Damon back and I said, you know, something's really not right. I have all this stress. It's coming out in this form of what we think was a panic attack. So I got back in the office right away, and it took some conversation, but what we had come to, it was very difficult to talk about, is that I developed a new subtype or theme of my obsessive compulsive disorder. And that was relationship OCD, which is very taboo, very difficult to talk about. But pretty much what it was is I have been married to my high school sweetheart for 13 years. And it was this idea that I didn't want to be with him anymore. And I was having intrusive thoughts and images of being with other men that were very close to me. So these were colleagues that I worked with every day. These were best friends and stuff like that. And I really struggled with that to the point where, so I started seeing him again in May of 2016. And I started punishing myself for these thoughts because I have a really strong, what they call thought action fusion. So I immediately associate, if I have these intrusive thoughts of being with other people, that I'm a cheater and I've cheated on my husband and I'm a terrible person. I'm not worthy or deserving of good things. So all this started to come out is I started to not eat. And I started to, compulsively exercise excessively. And so with not eating and the exercise, I started to lose weight. I dropped weight really fast. I got myself into a situation where I became very obsessive about that because it was the only thing that made me feel a little bit better. So all I could think about was not eating and food. And all I could think about was the next time I could exercise. The exercise started weaving into every, you know, corner of my daily routine. When I was supposed to be taking lunch breaks at work, I would just find an empty space and exercise. When I would read books to my kids at nighttime, I would do leg lifts. I was in constant motion, all to decrease weight because I didn't think I was deserving of being healthy. So ultimately it took about 2 months and I dropped significant weight and I started having heart palpitations. My electrolytes were off, and I got diagnosed with anorexia. And I got put into a partial hospitalization program. So that's where for about 7 weeks, I went to therapy Monday through Friday from 8 to 5-ish. They were really good about helping me in the sense of my eating disorder. You know, they refed me. I gained weight back. My brain was noticeably better in the sense that I was able to focus more. I was able to hold conversation because these are all things that I lost when I was really sick. And so I was discharged. I went to intensive outpatient for like a week or two, but it wasn't the right fit for me. So then I got discharged again to my outpatient team and we were back at it. So continued to work on, started to work on this relationship OCD component, which was really difficult. The exposures were, you know, just letting those thoughts be there of, yep, maybe I do want to be with somebody else. And as you can imagine, that did not sit well with me. So it took a while to make some progress so that I felt like it was worth my time of doing. And then what happened is I was very unlucky in the sense that I developed those intrusive thoughts and images about my therapist, which was really, really, really difficult. It was difficult in a lot of ways, right? Like he's one of my number one support systems. I felt super ashamed. I had no interest in telling him, which then how can he help treat something if he doesn't know about it? So I kept it quiet. And as you can imagine, when you keep it quiet and you continue to do compulsions to try to get those intrusive thoughts to go away, the intrusive thoughts just get stronger and worse. So it pretty much completely enveloped me. And so I ended up the beginning of this year, I ended up having what they called a manic crisis, or a psychotic episode. I was in so much distress because of these thoughts about my therapist that, a handful of days went by where I started cutting myself. And these are behaviors that are not historic for me.
Yeah.
And so I started cutting myself. And then I remember it was a Friday and I had Alprazolam, PRN or as needed, prescribed to me specifically for flying. I get very, very nervous because I have no control when I fly. Mm-hmm. So I figured, you know, I'm in distress at this moment. If I just take a little bit of this, you know, maybe every hour or every other hour, like I'll get through my day and I won't cut. And these were my goals. So the goal was to help myself. Unfortunately, what happened is the benzodiazepine built up in my system, and that mixed with just where I was mentally created this like psychotic episode. Mm-hmm. So then I started hearing voices of just repetitive, cut yourself, you're not deserving, you're not worth it, cut yourself. And I remember I went for a walk because I felt like if I stayed in my house, that something bad was going to happen. Mm-hmm. So I left, went for a walk, called my therapist on the phone and said, I can't go home because I'm afraid if I go home that I'll either cut too deep or worse. And so he stayed on the phone with me. My husband had arrived home by the time I made it back around the block. And he said, I'm going to stay on the phone with you. We're going to go inside. We're going to tell your husband what's going on. And we're going to call the appropriate people and get assessed. And so I did that with his support. And I called our local inpatient program and got assessed and was put inpatient for, I stayed for about 3 days. I probably, hindsight, I should have stayed longer to be a little bit more balanced out. But I have worked in mental health in my past. I actually have worked at the healthcare system that I go to whenever I have these incidents. Mm-hmm. And so as a nurse, I know the criteria that they're looking for a discharge. You know, so I knew exactly what I had to say and what I had to do to be able to get out of there. So I did it. It was a good reprieve, though. It allowed me to reset. It allowed me to come down off of the benzodiazepines in a safe space. So it was very much needed at that time. So then came out and my therapist was pretty much like, oh my gosh, what happened? And at that point in time is when I told him that I've been having these thoughts about him specifically for a year, 2 years at that point. And that I was really scared that like, if I didn't get a hold of these, that situation would reoccur again. So I've been working with him for ever since then on those thoughts. And we've done a ton of exposures about them. And in the beginning, they were terrible. I can tell you one example is, so one of my thoughts was that anytime I went to his office, I was afraid that I would make some sort of advancement like towards him. And so he started off by sitting in a chair 6 feet away from me with his back to me, because the whole idea was, you know, if he's not looking, then I can do whatever I want. And if there's this impending, you know, need to do this, then obviously I would do that. And I remember he turned his back to me and I jumped up on the back of the couch like a cat. I was like, get me out of here. Mm-hmm. Don't do that. Like, we're not doing this.
Yeah.
And so we struggled through it for a while. And then we got the chair closer and closer and closer and closer until it was pretty much backed right up to the seat that I was sitting in. Hmm. You know, I've had to do a lot of, so one thing that I struggle with my OCD that is not helpful is I struggle significantly with mental compulsions, which I feel in my experience have been a lot more difficult to deal with, than, or to treat than the physical ones. And so I've done a lot of those in regards to these intrusive thoughts. I'm just letting those thoughts be there of, yep, maybe I am in love with my therapist. Yep, maybe I don't want to be with my husband anymore. Maybe I want to marry my therapist, all of these things. And we've made significant improvement over the past, that was, so my episode was in January. So since January. And actually, it was really nice, probably about a month ago. I remember I went into my appointment and I was like, oh my gosh, I have some exciting news to share with you. And he was like, what? And I was like, I can sit here and say, I think I'm not in love with you anymore. This is great. And so we both applauded that because that was a big moment for me. But yeah, so that's what we're currently working on. A couple things in this past year that have kind of been some curveballs. I did get a diagnosis of bipolar 2. Mm-hmm. And that's been, and then I was put on a mood stabilizer, which has helped. And then actually very recently, in the past 3 to 4 weeks, it's been challenging, but I have been diagnosed with panic disorder. So that is a whole new road for me. I had that experience of that panic attack back in 2016. And then since then, maybe had, you know, 2 other ones. They were pretty minimal. But starting about a month ago, I had a significant one, probably one of the worst that I've ever had. And then they were happening probably 5 to 6 days a week after that. They were not as intense as that one, but the intensity was still high, very uncomfortable, very disrupting to my day-to-day living. And so I just started this week the treatment plan of interoceptive exposures. So just started those. They're challenging. I'm very much utilizing my amazing ability of avoidance for those because who would want to put themselves in that situation? Definitely not me right now. So I just kind of am flying by the seat of my pants, but also just going with small goals of today, I'll try to do, you know, 3 trials of 1 and then trying to build that up as each day goes by. But so, yeah, so that's kind of a summary of beginning to end where I am now.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for going into so much detail. And your Damon, right? Your current therapist, you're working with him on panic or is it someone else?
Yep. I'm working with him.
Cool.
He's been, it's been amazing how much just the whole general idea of exposure response prevention has worked across all of the things that I've dealt with. So, I mean, he stayed with me during, you know, throughout the eating disorder stuff. I do have a dietitian as well. But he was really helpful in the sense of he worked a lot with me on exposures to like feared foods. You know, there were times where I would sit in his office and he'd be like, you know, I was super fearful of granola bars for a really long time. And he'd be like, okay, here's a granola bar. We're going to sit here and we're just going to eat it. And, you know, it would cause tons of anxiety, but as you can imagine, the anxiety would come down over time. So just doing it with that, obviously with the obsessive compulsive disorder, and then now the interoceptive exposures with the panic.
Yeah. Thank you. How is it with your son at the minute? Has that got better?
Yeah. So interesting that you bring that up, actually. So that's another component about this is my son is turning 10 in the coming month, and he has obsessive compulsive disorder. Okay. So there was a long time in my treatment with Damon way back years ago where I was very fearful that I was going to give my children either obsessive compulsive disorder or an eating disorder. And I, you know, I spent hours just analyzing and researching, quote unquote, on the internet, checking and all of this. And he had me do exposures of, yep, maybe I will, maybe that will happen. And lo and behold, I have a son that is turning 10 that has obsessive compulsive disorder. So the one thing that I try to hold on to with this is, if you're going to look at the glass half full, I'm hoping that the reason I've had to deal with everything that I've had to go through is so that I can be the best possible advocate for him. So thankfully we recognized this at a very young age. I actually started noticing things when he was like 2 or 3, but I also didn't want to project because of my own personal experiences. So in the beginning, I kind of just passed some of the things off as like, nope, that's just a behavior, you know, for a 2 or 3 year old and he'll grow out of it and whatnot. But when he turned 6, that's when we knew that it was very likely. As you can imagine, genetics aren't great in our family for this, in our family lineage. But a couple of things that started happening were he, so one time he was in the house and I saw him knocking on the door. And I was like, what are you doing? And he's like, I have to knock on the door 6 times or I'm going to get stung by a bee. And I was like, okay, red flag. Like, that's really illogical, right? We're inside of the house. So I was like, okay, that's interesting. So I tried to kind of deter him in the moment, you know, let's try not to knock. How about we knock 5 times? He didn't like that. He pushed back on it. Around the same time, we were riding our bikes and he stopped and he seemed very distressed. And I was like, what's wrong? And he was like, my brain keeps telling me to lift my hands off the handlebars. My brain keeps telling me to lift my hands off the handlebars. And I explained to him that sometimes our brains tell us to do things that we don't want to do. And so we have to push back. And I was like, just tell your brain, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that. So he was like, okay, okay. So then he rode up a little bit more and he was in front of me and I watched it from behind. It was like slow motion. He lifted his hands off his handlebars. He lost control of his bike and he took a pretty big digger. We walked all the way home because he didn't want to get back on his bike. And it actually took us probably about 6 weeks to get him back on his bike. And that was with, at that point in time is when we knew that we had to get somebody else involved. So we did find a therapist who treats young children for obsessive compulsive disorders, very familiar with ERP. And one of the first things we started, I remember, was the exposure with his bike. So it started off by having him just sit on his bike. And then it was, you know, walk your bike with your feet. And then it was, okay, ride a little bit. And then eventually we got him back on his bike. But yeah, so he has experienced several things. Him along with myself, you know, as time passes, you start to get control of a couple different entities of your OCD and then it warps a little, throws you a new curveball. So then you got to deal with that. But he's been in therapy ever since. We intend on keeping him in therapy to just help support him. And his quality of life is significantly better. He does take medication too to help him. But yeah, he's doing great. He still has his challenges. He struggles a lot with balancing, feeling, you know, having the need to touch things a certain amount of times, stuff like that. But other than that, I feel like he's worked on a lot of things and really made some significant improvements. So, and I'm his number one cheerleader. you know, it helps a lot. The two of us have a lot of pretty honest conversations. You know, I'll be like, oh, okay, I got to go upstairs because I have to go do my own exposures. And he's like, oh, what are you working on? You know, so I share with him things that are appropriate for his age. Yeah. But yeah, so, but in regards to what you had asked with my children, it's gotten better. I still struggle with those thoughts though. I have this, and this is kind of, you know, morbid, but I've always struggled with this idea that, and this fear that one of my kids is going to commit suicide in their teenage years. And so this affects me and my pattern of thinking in a whole array of ways. You know, something as simple as like, I have to buy a pair of tennis shoes. Okay, well, will this pair of tennis shoes, will they get made fun of this? Or, you know, will they get made fun of for wearing this pair? And then they'll get bullied. And then that'll cause them to not like themselves. And then they might commit suicide. And there's always this kind of train of thought that leads in that direction. So I've gotten much better, but that's been with the help of my therapist. You know, I've had to do things such as limit time limits when I'm shopping for the kids, you know. And in the beginning, it still seemed like what would seem like a lot to somebody else, but was not a lot to me. You know, it'd be like, okay, you're allowed 30 minutes. Now you're allowed 20 minutes. Now you're allowed 10 minutes. And I had to set timers and things like that. So it's getting better, but it's still something I work on just because that fear is so ingrained in me. And the genetics scare me, you know, obviously he has obsessive compulsive disorder. You know, he has generalized anxiety. My daughter is, she just turned 8. And actually she is on medication as well. She struggled significantly over the past year with panic. But she is doing wonderful. Oh my gosh. The meds have helped her significantly. And she also sees a therapist. So we got our whole family kind of set up, to help all of us, but yeah, it's great. So we work together, we struggle together. But we're a good team.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. And obviously, I'm glad your son and your daughter are doing better. What was I going to say? Yeah, I'm curious of whether when, you know, you said years ago you were doing the exposures around because you were worrying about your son getting OCD or developing OCD, and then you were exposing to that, and now it's happened, so to speak. Did your brain try and, well, it has happened, but you know what I mean? Has your brain latched on, the OCD part of your brain latched on to, well, it happened because I did those exposures?
So I wouldn't say that, but I would say that my OCD latched on immediately to the I told you so. So I can tell you the second that I realized we were headed down that path with my son, I can be very headstrong at times. And I know that. And my OCD can be very, it's very black and white. And I marched right into my therapist's office and I was like, see, I told you. This whole time I've been telling you that I've been afraid of this because it was going to happen. And you kept telling me to say, maybe it will, maybe it won't. Yeah. And I was like, and look at where we're sitting now. I think the biggest struggle with that is so my OCD plays by my own set of rules. So I apply rules to myself that I do not apply to anyone else and don't expect anyone else to follow. And so in the beginning, I think the biggest struggle for me was it's my fault. I'm the genetic carrier. I gave it to him. It's my fault that he's having this negative impact on his life. And so that's something that I've had to work through and something that my therapist has worked on with me, which has been, you know, it seems very logical, I feel like, to people who will hear this, but I'm a nurse by trade. And so, you know, he constantly kind of refutes that by saying, you know, would you walk into the med surgical floor, walk right into one of those rooms? I worked with pediatric patients for a long time, you know, walk right up to one of those kids and say, you know, you're here because this is your fault. You know, it's your fault that you have, you know, that you have diabetes, or it's your fault that you have cancer, or it's your fault that you have a heart defect. And right away, I'm like, oh my gosh, I would never say that. That's horrible. And he's like, but you say that to yourself all the time. He's like, something you were born with, something you have no control over having. He's like, you blame yourself and you tell yourself that it's your fault all the time. So that's something that we've had to work on a lot. You know, cause that just goes along with that whole thought action fusion too, of, you know, in the past, every time I've had like an intrusive thought that's been very uncomfortable in regards to the relationship OCD, I've said, it's my fault. I'm a terrible person. I'm allowing these thoughts, you know, and that makes me not deserving. So, we've had to really work on that significantly, to try to change that frame of thinking. We're getting there, but it's still difficult because it's my go-to. I've been doing it for so long. It's so ingrained in my brain to just, you know, I have this mentality of I'm a superhero. I can take on anything and I will do anything so that as long as all the people around me that I love and care for, you know, are having the best time or are the healthiest that they can be or, you know, but in the meantime, I'm not taking care of myself, or treating myself in the same ways that I treat all the people around me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I was going to, you know, I'm glad you went into that because I was going to ask, you know, if we think about the what you're saying there about the relationship OCD and the it's my fault, quote unquote, that I gave this to my son. Also with the anorexia, you were punishing yourself right through restriction of food and increased exercise, and it this sense of maybe a guilt or I'm not good enough came up in my head. How have you guys been working on that, because it seems like a common thread among those few things?
So a lot of that has been just reworking the thought. So, you know, a lot of times, like in the past, we've gone through the actual work, like the worksheet of thought challenging and taking the thought and saying, okay, can you actually supply evidence? That's another thing that he frequently asked me. He's like, you know, you'd be an amazing lawyer. He's like, we've heard that. He's like, but I want to hear you lawyer up for yourself or for your OCD. And I never can, right? It's the first sentence out of my mouth every time is, well, I feel would never hold up in court. So where is the logic? Right. So it's been a lot of thought challenging and thought reworking, you know, continued conversation about that comparison has really helped me of like, you know, would you go up to somebody else and say the same things to them that you say to yourself? And first thing out of my mouth every time is absolutely not. I'm a very caring and empathetic individual. That's why I chose to go into nursing. Yeah. So that has been really helpful. I would say primarily that and just time of just hearing it over and over again. I mean, this is something we've been working on now for a couple of years, of this whole idea that it's not my fault. You know, I didn't pick my genetics. There is a way to treat it. So that's been primarily what we've done for that.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Thank you. So, was there like in any of this, I'm sure there was, but was there like a light bulb moment or was something clicked, either how you view OCD or how you viewed the recovery or anything like that?
Yes, I've had several light bulb moments, thankfully. One of the biggest ones I can think of, though, that honestly saved my life was when I got really deep into the throes of the eating disorder behaviors due to the obsessive compulsive disorder. I thought I was fine. Everybody else around me was kind of watching me waste away. And, you know, people would say certain things, you know, my husband would say things, my therapist Damon, you know, kept giving me the feedback of, I don't think this is going in the right direction. I think you're sick, you know, and I would tell them all, no, you guys are wrong. Like, I'm just using exercise as a way of getting out the stress that I'm feeling from the obsessive compulsive disorder and the intrusive thoughts. And I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine is a frequent phrase I use that I'm not allowed to use when I'm in therapy. but one night, my husband and I went to bed and my husband turned to me and very boldly just said, I think you're going to die from this. I really am not sure if you're going to make it through this. And all of a sudden this just significant light bulb went off and I was like, oh my gosh, like, I think I'm really sick. I don't have control right now. And I need help because I can't stop. And that next day I went into Damon's office and I just said, I looked right at him and I said, I think I'm really sick and I don't know what to do and I need help. And that's when we called to get the assessment. And I got placed into the partial hospitalization program pretty quick, thankfully. So that was one significant light bulb moment for me. Another one, I feel like they've become more pronounced as I kind of move through this. So as you can imagine, being, put inpatient, causes or gives opportunity to have many of those light bulb moments. You know, you're put into an environment where there's not really a lot going on. There's a lot of time to think. And one thing I remember specifically that I really realized when I was there is that I am so blessed to have an amazing support system. I have family members that love and care for me, friends that love and care for me, you know, people in the OCD community, my treatment team, my husband, my children. I wasn't allowing any of those people to help me, to support me, to care for me. I was pushing everyone away and saying, I'm fine. I got this because I had this, you know, idea that I never wanted to negatively impact anyone else's lives, only positively impact. And that was kind of the association I had. So that was a big light bulb moment for me. When I was actually inpatient, I made several phone calls to friends that are very close to me and said, you know, I'm so thankful for the relationship that we have. And this is what I've been experiencing for the past years. And really opened up that dialogue with a lot of them, which in turn really, you know, positively affected me and helped me because now I know they're on my side and they check in on me all the time. And it's really great to have that support. I think some other light bulb moments have been just as I've experienced some of these newer experiences this year, I've been quicker to identify them and to, you know, push for, okay, what are we going to do now? You know, specifically with this panic, I noted instead of, you know, carrying this on for months or years before trying to identify what I was going to do about it, like, I just was able to say, like, this is not normal for me. This is not my baseline. I'm not familiar with this. It's disrupting my day to day. It's making me very uncomfortable. So what are we going to do about it? and my treatment team's been very helpful with that. So I would say, yes, there's been a lot of light bulb moments throughout the process that have in turn saved my life in a lot of ways.
Brilliant. Yeah. Thank you for going into those. Words of hope, you know, if someone's listening, they're in a similar position to you were maybe 5-10 years ago or a year ago, what would you tell them?
Oh gosh, words of hope. So, I mean, the biggest one is there is hope. There is definitely hope. It makes me so happy to see the increased awareness of obsessive compulsive disorder. Recently, it makes me so happy to see people pushing back against those stigmas. You know, it's very common in media for people to use the phrase, I'm so OCD. You know, I very recently just saw this sweatshirt that said obsessive about Christmas or something, or obsessive Christmas disorder. And I was just like, oh my goodness. You know, things like that. So I'm really happy to see that people, representatives from the OCD community, et cetera, are kind of pushing back on that to not mock a disease that can be so debilitating and cause so much fear in somebody. Another thing too is there's treatment out there, and it comes in many, many ways. There's so many great resources out there. The ILCDF, International OCD Foundation, No OCD, all of these provide opportunities for people to find appropriate treatment. Because I would say that's one of the biggest hurdles that I was up against is, you know, I started experiencing the symptoms when I was 8, and I didn't see a trained therapist in OCD and exposure response prevention until I was 27. And that is one of the reasons I'm still in therapy today, is because that is a lot to unpack, a lot of years of stuff to unpack and work on. Yeah. So I would say if you even have a question that this may apply to you, you know, reach out to one of those resources online, or reach out to your local behavioral health institution, you know, to some sort of outreach program, you know, get an assessment done to see if this may apply, because your quality of life can be significantly improved with some of these, you know, evidence-based practices that these physicians put into play.
You pick up the phone and call the 20-year-old you. What'd you tell her?
Oh boy. Oh, pick up the phone and call the 20-year-old me. I would say the first advice I would give is, if you feel like something's not right, reach out for help. I feel like I kept it hidden for so long. And I just masked it with the perfectionism and, you know, the happiness. So I would say that would be my first piece of advice, is if you feel like something's not right, reach out to the right people for help. I think some of the other advice I would give is that there are going to be ups and downs. It's not going to be this perfect road to recovery. Another thing too, that's been a struggle for me in the past, is I've always been looking for the cure, the ultimate cure, you know, the pill that'll make it all go away, or the list of exposures I can complete that'll make it all go away. And I just very recently have come to terms with the fact that that's not how it works. This will likely always be a part of my life, but I have gotten to the point, and will continue to grow in that aspect of getting to a point where it's manageable. You know, I can enjoy my life. I can do the things I want to do. I can eat the things I want to eat. And I'm not living in this constant, you know, stage of fear and worry and doubt. So even though I can't cure it and make it go away forever, I can make the quality of my life significantly better by following these different, you know, treatment regimens and whatnot. So that's definitely some of the advice I would give my 20-year-old self.
Yeah. Nice. Good. Cool. So, you've got a billboard in Wisconsin. What do you want written on that billboard?
A billboard in Wisconsin. What I want written. So something that I'm a significant advocate for right now is share your story. So I think that's probably what I would put on my billboard. And that's one of the biggest reasons that I'm doing this. I am you know, choosing to share my story so transparently about things that, you know, can be very hard to discuss. You know, I talk about the times that I cut myself. I talk about times that I've felt suicidal. I talk about times that, you know, I had an eating disorder. I talk about relationship OCD, which is still very taboo and uncomfortable to talk about. And the reason I'm doing all of these things is because my hopes are that if people hear these stories, they can recognize quickly that they're not alone, and that these things that they're going through don't have to be as feared as they're currently experiencing, that there is treatment out there to help them. And I think the best thing we can do is by sharing our stories, we not only give people hope, but at the same time, we decrease stigmas that are still in the community as well. You know, it's very easy to use a phrase such as "I'm so OCD" when you don't know any better. You know, oftentimes the people that use those phrases, they don't have any harmful intentions. They just aren't knowledgeable. And so by sharing our stories and being transparent about them, you can kind of put a face to the name of OCD and say, this is what it actually is. You know, this is what it actually looks like. This is how much distress it causes. This is how much pain I've experienced, you know, going through this. So I'm very thankful for, you know, all the people out there that have shared their story and continue to do so. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Love it. Thank you. So, lastly, anything else you wish you could have shared today?
So I think the only other thing is, I am writing a blog. It's smashingstigmas.com. And I'm writing kind of twofold. So I am slowly, rolling out my history and my story and how I've gotten to where I am today. But then in the meantime, I will insert kind of daily updates of significant changes. You know, I just wrote a post, I believe it was yesterday, about how I had to take a couple of weeks off of social media and writing my blog because this whole panic kind of onset came on very quickly and unexpectedly. And I really had to take that time to work with my team to get a treatment plan put in place, et cetera. Just kind of shows that it's ever evolving and there's still challenges, but this is how I work through them. So if you're interested, you can check that out. I'm on social media, Brooke Miller, MHA, Instagram, Twitter, and just really trying to use my voice to raise awareness and decrease stigmas, and in hopes all of this will increase access to resources so everybody can get the help that they need.
Excellent, excellent. I'll put the links in the show notes so people can go there and click it. Lastly, just thank you so much for sharing your story. I really appreciated hearing it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate being here.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. If you enjoy the OCD Stories podcast and would like to support us with a one-time tip/donation, please go to theocdstories.com/support. All tips, no matter how large or small, are greatly appreciated. Please subscribe and rate the show wherever you listen to the podcast. And thank you to NoCD for supporting our work. If you want to find out more about NoCD, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories or click the link in the episode description. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care.